Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, June 4th, 2015. In Lake State, intercommunal fighting claims lives.
On the side of Gon, 7 got killed and 18 injured. And on the side of Fiyi, 4 got killed and 5 wounded.
And on this day, to remember children worldwide who are physically and mentally abused, a health official in South Sudan says children do what they must to stay alive.
People have lost property, people have lost families, and they've been subjected to live certain ways of lives which basically link to their behavior. One of them is engaging in early sex because they want to survive.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Twelve people were killed and more than 20 others wounded during intercommunal fighting in Lake State's Rumbek East County on Monday, according to a local official. Media reports indicate that during a separate incident on that same day, armed cattle raiders killed two police officers in Rumbek Central County. Charlton Doki has more for VOA from Juba.
The Lake State Minister of Local Government and Law Enforcement, Jok Ayom Majak, says the clashes took place between two sections of the Dinka community in Rumbek East County.
On the side of Gon, 7 got killed and 18 injured. And on the side of Fiyi, 4 got killed and 5 wounded.
Majak says it's not the first time the Pachong and Maleng Agok communities have clashed with each other. He says just a few weeks ago, a similar incident occurred. Majak says in these communities, revenge killings for relatives killed in previous clashes are all too common.
What happened? The two sections already had a clashes already and they had killed themselves. But during the process, people were talking about peace. The section of Pachong is called Gon, and the section of Malangong is called Tiyi. The Gon section was the one revenging the kill of the person. Somebody killed.
Majak says state officials are doing everything in their power to calm the situation and prevent further attacks between rival communities.
That happened on Monday. On Tuesday, we sent our forces, we mean operation force of police and national security. Happened yesterday. Nothing happened today also. We are monitoring them and the forces are all around there. We have talked to the chiefs and their chiefs have talked to their youth, and hopefully there is nothing that has happened.
The Gurtong News website, meanwhile, is reporting that armed cattle raiders shot and killed two policemen in Aber Payam in Lake State's Rumbek Central County on the same day. The online publication quotes a police officer as saying that police officers were escorting cattle keepers and hundreds of their cattle to a neighboring village when the armed raiders ambushed them. Intercommunal clashes have been on the rise in Lake State in recent months. Local leaders estimate that more than 500 people have been killed in the last 6 months alone. Repeated calls to Rumbek East County Commissioner Martin Matian for comment on this story went unanswered, while Lake State's Information Minister Thieu Waltak Ping declined to comment, saying he was outside the state capital at the moment and did not have up-to-date information. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
South Sudan's ministers of defense and national security appeared before the Western Equatoria State Parliament earlier this week to answer questions about the recent killings of government forces and civilians in Mundri West County. The ministers blamed the killings on opposition forces loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. Philip Thon Oleu reports for VOA from Juba.
Defense Minister Kuala Manyang told the Council of States, the upper house of South Sudan Parliament, on Monday that 7 of the country's 10 states were calm until rebel activities emerged in Western Equatoria a few weeks ago. He says tension have also devolved along the Kenyan border in Eastern Equatoria State. Manyang says the killing of two government soldiers in Munduru West almost 2 weeks ago was the work of the rebels.
Armed group linked with the SPLM in opposition under Wesley Welebe have appeared to be operating in the area and may be the one responsible for the following incidences. On May the 22nd, two SPLA soldiers were shot dead and a third was wounded.
And Manyang says a day later, during a security meeting, John Kaliopa, the executive director of Munro West County, was also killed. In total, Manyang says
casualties in Munro were 11 SPLA soldiers killed and 8 wounded, 1 policeman killed, wildlife soldiers, 2 were killed, prison warden, 1 killed, civilians, 8 killed. On May 29th, armed youths attacked the SPLA position at Nyaka border with the Democratic Republic of Congo. They attacked SPLA base twice in the night and were repulsed. 2 of the attackers were killed and they were identified to be Arrow Boys. The SPLA lost 1 soldier and 3 soldiers were wounded.
Manyang says SPLA headquarters dispatched more troops to Munro West. He says where the fighting has been heaviest, Upper Nile, Unity and Jonglei states, government troops are making significant gains against the rebels.
Therefore, if winning the war is determined by the number of areas or the size of the area under the control of the government, then one can conclude that the rebels have lost the war and victory is certain.
But Isaac Mamour, the Minister of National Security, acknowledges the country's economic hardship has been aggravated by the conflict.
And this is one of the core of the whole problem.
MP James Magog of Lakes State says he wants more answers about why the security situation is deteriorating in Western Equatoria.
I've been hearing the state government talking of Arrow Boys, talking of unknown gunmen, while in our national government we talk of rebels because the rebels claim the responsibility. And our government at the state level is denying this.
The Council of States has formed its own committee to investigate Munro West security problems. That committee is to report back to MPs within 2 weeks. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
SPLM in opposition spokesman James Gadet Dak says Mishar's rebel group is building up its presence in Western Equatoria State. But Gadet told VOA Atlas fellow Tito Justin that the armed opposition group is not responsible for the violence in Mundri.
The state government has confirmed that it is the government forces that have been killing the civilians, not our forces.
Okay, you said you have confirmed. Are there some SPLM in opposition rebels also in Western Equatoria State?
Yes, we have appointed a Major General, Elie Lako. He's in charge of the area. He's for opposition, and he has been recruiting forces there against the government. And he has been, recruiting some armed youth within the state, and these are called Arrow Boys. So we have forces there. There is also another group which intends to fight against the government separately. They are on the ground there. Plus the armed youth. So these combined forces are on the ground there. We have our forces, but we were not responsible for the killing of the civilians.
Okay, some few months back, we had some Major General Asuba that he has defected in Western Equatoria State. Is he linked to the rebel or the opposition, SPLM position in the state?
Yes, he's allied to us. He's one of our senior officers on the ground there.
That was James Gadet Dock speaking earlier today from Nairobi with VOA fellow Tito Justin. Gadet says there has also been heavy fighting near the Unity State capital Bentiu. He says rebel forces repulsed a massive offensive by forces loyal to President Kiir yesterday in a town just north of Bentiu. Gadet says the government launched the offensive to try to recapture a major oil field under rebel control. He says the rebels inflicted huge casualties on government forces and captured 7 tanks. SPLA spokesman Philip Aguirre confirmed that there were clashes in Unity State, but said the Army was not in a position to comment further because it has not yet received full details of the fighting from its field commanders. After a heated debate, the Central Equatoria State Parliament passed a resolution yesterday to end the practice of using state resources to collect national government revenues. Central Equatoria State officials say the practice, adopted 3 years ago, is draining funds normally used to provide state services. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Jupo.
Naptali Hassan-Gale, the Speaker of the Central Equatoria State Transitional Parliament, says Central Equatoria should not have to use its resources to collect taxes for the federal government.
The state government should pull out from the collection and immediately, of course, deploy our own tax collectors to on the ground so that they can begin to do their normal work as they used to be doing.
Gale says several reasons led to Parliament's action this week and that the move has been long overdue. For example, Gale says his state used to take in at least 13 million South Sudanese pounds or $4.4 million per month before the collection of state and national taxes was combined. But after the collection process was centralized,
at the beginning, what we received was around 3 point something million, which is way down what the state had been collecting. And it has been going back and forth. You don't know exactly how much money is being collected per month.
Some observers wonder why it took so long for the Central Equatoria State Parliament to make the change. Gale says the bureaucratic process got in the way.
When the process was first set, before people would be actually agree on the whole issue, this particular concept found its way to the Council of Ministers, and it was blessed by the Council of Ministers as a policy. Therefore, it became very difficult for the state, you know, to argue its position. And so, but when we started realizing the challenges that are coming with it, the battle of opting out of this has now taken us some time.
Gale says the 2012 decision by the National Council of Ministers to centralize the collection of taxes was unconstitutional. He says the 2012 resolution contradicts Article 179 of the South Sudan National Transitional Constitution, which grants the state's powers to manage state income tax, stamp duty, and excise duty, among other taxes. Gale says the National Ministry of Finance at that time required the Ministries of Finance of all 10 states to sign an agreement centralizing the collection of all taxes. Gale also says the state often receives its federal revenue late, making it difficult to provide basic services or pay civil servants' salaries. Lual Deng, managing director of the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies think tank in Juba, says states should have a right to opt out of collecting federal taxes.
If they have their constitutional right and they have been waiting for 3 years and they have not been getting what they used to get before the centralization, so it is their constitutional right.
Juba made the move to centralize tax collection in 2012, knowing that revenues would fall dramatically after the government shut down oil production and austerity measures were introduced. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. In Uganda, a message of hate prompts officials to think more about policing social media. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could teach a child two skills, what would it be and why?
The first skill I could teach my child is communication skills, so that she knows how to communicate with everybody, because they say communication runs the world. When you communicate, you can get what you want and be able to live a good life. Another thing I can teach, another skill, is discipline, how to have a discipline, because without discipline, you cannot be successful in life.
Respect people outside in case if they found the older people outside there. Yeah, I teach them, more especially cooking. If you are a woman, you have to know how to cook. Because then when you come, you go for marriage. If you don't know how to cook, you'll suffer.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. In northern Bahar al-Ghazal, lawmakers are accusing Agriculture Minister Lual Dalmarach of failing to address the state's growing food insecurity or provide answers about the whereabouts of thousands of liters of missing fuel. As Abraham Agoth reports for VOA from Mouil, it appears to be the first step toward kicking Dow out of office.
Members of Northern Bahar al-Ghazal State Legislative Assembly accuse Minister Dow of misappropriating public revenues collected for the operation of the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry. They also accuse him of taking more than 890,000 liters of ministry's petrol for his personal use. In addition, the state legislators say more than 100,000 South Sudanese pounds of agriculture and forestry ministry's funding has disappeared without being accounted for. Dow has steadfastly denied all the allegations against him. He was given 2 weeks to refund the missing money and missing fuel. Akur Wolakur chairs the state legislative's agriculture committee and is leading the auditing committee that has been investigating Dow's ministry. Agur says the records confirm that Dow is involved in the misuse of public funds and that proper procedures will be followed to deal with Dow in a legal manner. Agur says their investigations also turned up to other improper activities in the Ministry of Agriculture.
There are some money that was generated from the Minister of Agriculture, especially in the rice scheme. There are some crops which is tractors were sell, and some cars were sell, and then the money, he lost them all. In total, is about 814,295 Sudanese pounds. Again, we have money for food, about 13,000 US dollars. Was lost.
Aguirre says the assembly is likely to pursue one of two options.
One is a vote of no confidence. Two is to pay the law. These are the two choices that given to him.
The assembly's chairperson of information, Ashad Thiep, predicts Dow will face legal proceedings.
The law will take its course because we are not against individual, but we are protecting the law.
Dow says everything he has been accused of were the activities related to his official duties. He also acknowledges that 200 barrels of fuel were loaned to the State Ministry of Finance with the knowledge of the former caretaker governor.
The intention was that the Ministry of Finance would repay them back. Unfortunately, up to now, the ministry did not pay the money. So yes, this was 200 barrels, and it is in the responsibility of the Ministry of Finance. They need to repay those back fuel because they were brought from national government and they were meant for the agriculture. What the Ministry of Finance did with this fuel, they were used to repair our state roads. This repair that took place, they were using fuel that coming from the Ministry of Agriculture. So yes, the fuel were loaned out, but it was not me. I didn't take them for personal use. I used them for the cause of the same government.
Lawmakers also accused Dow of failing to meet the objectives of the 2015 agricultural season for the state. In April, President Salva Kiir said his government would send 1,000 tractors to farmers across 10 states to boost food security in the country. But as of last week, those tractors have yet to be delivered, and even if they arrive next week, they will be of little use to farmers seeing the cultivation season will soon be over. MPs in Northern Bahar al-Ghazal blame the Agriculture Ministry for poor coordination of the projects. For VOA News, I am Abraham Agoth reporting in Awil.
Since 1983, June 4th has been set aside by the United Nations as a day to remember children around the world who suffer physical, mental, and emotional abuse. South Sudan's ongoing conflict has put many children at even greater risk of falling victim to aggression. For VOA, Megumi Davis-Rockeringe has this report on the International Day of Innocent Children Victims of Aggression. This story is about young girls in Juba who have turned to prostitution to survive.
17-year-old Amina Lona used to dream of getting a job that would pay her a decent living when she grew up. something like working for an NGO or the government, she thought. She studied hard at school and was on track to realize her dream when her father died. Lona, that's not her real name, had 3 more years left of her to complete primary school. But she had to abandon her studies and move to Juba to find work to survive. Quickly, the 17-year-old was offered a job in a bar. But there were conditions.
This boss for bar just tells me he wants to sleep with me. If he are not, if he refuse him, let me leave the job.
Lona took the job. It was the beginning of her life as a sex worker. She says men used to come to the brothel where she worked and offer her or some other girls up to £200 for unprotected sex.
If you are bad, the girl is refused, going to fight with this girl, just beating. This one is the way I'm see is very bad, I'm see is not good.
Lona says she's lucky she did not contract HIV. In other words, from time to time, she did have sex without a condom for money. She says sometimes girls would give in to men's demands simply because they were hungry. Kathy Grandi heads Confident Children Out of Conflict, or CCC. She says many of the girls in Juba who turn prostitution do so to escape poverty and life in the streets. She says even though sex work is a difficult choice for most girls to make, for some it is the only option and the lesser of two evils.
One of the girls, one time she said, when she sees a big man, she's terrified. Some girls have a strategy of not doing it full-time, like 3 days resting and then eating. When the money is finished, of course, they are motivated to go and get more customers or clients so that they get money to eat. The real reason why the girls went to the brothels, they said when they lived in the communities, on the streets and in the slums, they were sexually abused for nothing. They would rather offer themselves for money.
Habib Dafala Awongo is the Director General for Program Coordination at the South Sudan HIV-AIDS Commission, or SSSC. Awongo says the crisis that erupted in South Sudan in December 2013 has made life even tougher for many South Sudanese. Many are taking desperate measures to stay alive.
People have lost property, people have lost families, and they've been subjected to live certain ways of life. Lives which basically link to their behavior. One of them is engaging in early sex because they want to survive. And this is for exchange of money to make sure they get something to help them buy food, to help them buy clothes, and also pay rent wherever they are.
South Sudan has had a law since 2008 that is intended to protect children from abuse. And last year, the government ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. But 18 months of conflict have made the law and the UN Convention look like hollow words on the paper. The conflict has pushed more children into poverty and forced some of them to take the difficult decision of selling their bodies to survive. Green and I say some of the children she has met have been involved in the sex industry for so long. They think everyone works as a prostitute.
I was very surprised that some of the girls thought all women are like that. Until they come to see the other girls that they knew before, especially the girls who are in our place, who are very confident, going to school, achieving, results in school. And when they see them looking so nice, they really envy them.
Brenda says NGOs have to raise awareness among children who work in the sex industry that there is a way out of it. She says the best way to remove the allure of sex work is to put South Sudan back on the path of development. For that to happen, the conflict that is still ravaging parts of the country must end. As the world marks the 32nd International Day of Innocent Children, victims of aggression, there is no sign that will happen anytime soon. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devsirwakarinj.
In Uganda, a hateful message spread over the popular messaging platform WhatsApp has prompted debate over monitoring social media. President Yoweri Museveni has called for the creators of the message to be arrested, but some are saying prosecution could set a dangerous precedent. Elizabeth Pola has more from Kampala.
When a hateful audio message spread over WhatsApp ridiculing the Bahima people of Western Uganda, it sparked anger from President Yoweri Museveni. In response to the audio, Mr. Museveni released a nearly 15-minute-long video calling for the arrest of those who had created the message. Directly addressing the perpetrators behind the audio, he calls them fools and enemies looking to divide the nation. Yet the president's video has caused its own mixed reaction. The language Mr. Museveni speaks in the video is Ranyankole, spoken in southwestern Uganda. This left many wondering why an anti-tribalism message would be delivered in a language specific to his particular tribe. Some also balked at President Museveni's suggestion that anybody who had shared the WhatsApp message was complicit in ethnic hate. But many Ugandans support the clampdown on ethnic hate. Popular TV panelist Colin Asimwe says tribal division in Uganda is still strong and cannot be allowed to spiral.
Because of what happened in the region, I mean, like, if you see what happened in South Sudan, because that was an ethnic, one ethnicity rising up against another, there was Kenya, there was, you know, Burundi, and then there was Rwanda. So it's so sensitive. I mean, like, it's so sensitive. And not even just, like, the civilian population like you and me, just even like the security services and the government. The last time it tried to happen was with the Kony and Northern Uganda. So there's a lot of work. Like, there's so much to worry about.
Ugandan law bans the promotion of sectarian hate. Although there has never been a conviction for this crime, because of vague wording, the law remains contentious. Some suggest it has been used primarily against journalists and opposition candidates. A lawyer who has worked on online media laws, Peter Magela, says the law on sectarian hate is applicable in this case, but he says applying the law to social media could be a problem.
What I find as a challenge is really not the what the law says. Mm-hmm. The challenge is how to enforce what the law says. How to identify the originator is a very difficult thing. Once you identify the originator, how to choose who to sue, because publication would mean anyone who shared, anyone who posted on his or her Facebook, anyone who possibly liked. It becomes so many people who got into that. The problem we've had in this country is many times people, there's some sort of selective justice for selective criminal justice. So it's like if there's a political opponent doing that, the law would catch up with him.
Although the WhatsApp audio in question was clearly aimed at demeaning the Bahima, mitigating hate speech and freedom of expression in the lead-up to the 2016 presidential elections could prove to be a delicate balance between protecting the nation's unity and clamping down on social media. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
That's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Etole d'Etat by Congolese musician Koffi Olomide.
Petit nanga yo yo yo, Claudia Sassou, petit nanga yo yo yo.
Natonanga Gloria étoile d'état. Magie des épices et des verrues, naïs tout juste avant la nuit. Malala bien.
We've been listening to Kofi Alameda with the song Etoile d'Etat. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Comment séparer le texte du contexte?